Well, we continue our broadcast from the Flamingo Hilton here on the beautiful Colorado River in Laughlin, Nevada. And we have a very interesting couple of people here who have a book out called Who's Who in UFOs and ETs. And we're certainly going to discuss the book in detail. But and by the way, you can go to our website at jerrypippin.com, click on the neon alien, and you'll see this interview posted there as well for the radio listeners. And you simply can see how to order the book and get more information about our two guests, Greg Wright and Nicolette Pavlovsky. I missed it.
Hello.
Almost got it.
Yes, Pavlovsky. It's a bit of a word to try and pronounce.
Well, it's a good name, but it's not Smith.
No, it's not.
Or Jones or any of those. Anyway, the first thing I want to talk to you about, by the way, and Nicolette and Greg, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Is basically the fact that you guys are considering doing an internet radio show yourself and maybe taking it on to national syndication, in which I think you have an interesting concept. One of you want to explain what it is?
Yes, I've always loved channeling. And I consider channeling an excellent way to get information on a one-to-one personal basis. But also I've heard channeling done over the radio where you can take calls. The channeled entity does not have to know anything about the person. They can tune into that person's soul, let's say, or higher self, and start getting information that it would take a psychologist many hours to even start to get. So it's perfect for radio, where you may only have a few minutes with each caller, but the entity can tell all sorts of things about the caller.
I like that part of the concept, and I think you guys have a little different views about different things, even though you've worked together for a while, so that may be, you know, interesting on the radio too, right, Nicolette?
Yes, we were going to call the show ET Views the News, and I thought it would be really fun to see what an ET's point of view would be about our daily news or our monthly news, particularly situations like the war and how we're handling our politics overseas. And they have a very different view as to how we should be handling things versus how we are actually handling things, as well as they have a tendency of being able to get information about some of the deep black projects that are going on behind the scenes as to why certain political movements are being made that the government is not telling us about. So that's always very useful.
Well, we hope you get this show off the ground. I think it'll be very, very interesting. Let's talk a little bit about the book, first of all. I guess the title is pretty self-fulfilling, huh?
Self-fulfilling?
Yeah. No, it tells you what it's about.
Oh, well, Who's Who in UFOs and ETs means we're covering anybody and any entity who either is an ET, we have a section for different races of ETs, or who...
Now, do you mean basically you can look at this book and figure out who's an ET and who's not?
Well, not so much that as when people are being contacted by ETs, who are you being contacted by and what is their agenda? So that's what we talk about as given to us through the channeling.
And now Nicolette's a channeler, right?
Correct.
And you are the interpreter or just the partner?
Well, I'm the questioner for one thing, and I also write up the information that we get from the channeling.
I'm very interested in following this up in a little bit, and we will about that. But let's talk about the different ET races and things like that. Nicolette, how many are there?
Well, there's billions, but there's like probably 56 or so that are actually in contact with Earth on a regular basis. And then there's, you know, more that are at least aware of Earth that may be involved in certain decisions about Earth. So there can be hundreds involved with Earth and Earth.
I was thinking more of the different kinds of species or whatever.
There's basically the major species are the insectoid species, the lizard species or amphibian species, and then the mammalian species. Those are the basic ones. Humans generally fall under marsupial, not the mammals that we tend to be. We're a mix of the lizard and the mammals that are under the class of the ape, which is apparently rare for human species. Most human species are marsupials in the outer regions.
And, I have to follow up on this part of it to find out a little bit more about that. You're saying how many species are there? I guess they're just unlimited, huh, as far as human species, or is that limited to certain parts of the universe, or what?
Things that look humanoid can either be based in bird, or they can be based in lizard, they can be based in amphibian, they can be based in marsupial. So, I mean, everything eventually develops into a very humanoid-like shape, eventually. So it's just a matter of what branch of animal did they originate from. Most of them are insectoid. The most common being that is out there is insectoid.
Well, explain to our listeners exactly what an insectoid being would look like. I mean, I hear the praying mantis type thing. Am I right on about that, or is there other things?
Well, there's many different things. There is a praying mantis type that tends to work with greys as well as other beings. They very much look like a praying mantis, only they're a good size. They're 8 feet tall, up to 10 feet tall. They have six arms and legs, and so there is more appendages to them, and of course most insectoids tend to have hive minds, but not all of them. A lot of them can be very individual in their thinking.
And then we hear about the reptilians, and it's just mind-boggling thinking about it. Is there a hierarchy? In other words, is somebody in charge, or are they all equal, or what?
It depends on the reptilian race that you're talking about. Most people are very general when they say reptilian, and the fact is that there's different types of reptilians. There are those that are very aggressive and have very warlike mannerisms, and then there's lizard-type people that are very passive and peaceful and spiritual. So it depends on what type of race you're talking about.
Greg Wright, you've been doing some research on this, too. The first thing I always think about when I hear about reptilians, are they cold-blooded?
Nicolette's shaking her head. The ones that have evolved, higher evolved, I guess are not, are warm-blooded like we are.
Interesting. In the insects, it's hard to think of them as highly developed individuals, because we think of insects as being a nuisance or whatever on this planet, but could you give us a little more insight into that?
Yes, basically what happens on a planet is that the when you get from the single-celled animals and you start developing more complicated animals, one of the first animals to start developing is the insect. And if the ecological systems have not been disrupted on that planet, then the insects will basically maintain reign over that planet and eventually develop into sentient, humanoid, intelligent beings that then also become spiritual. But when you have a disruption on that planet, such as polar shift or an asteroid or something like that, then certain species get wiped out, other species become the controllers and replace the previous species. And the ones that are more likely to survive is the insect, the ones that are second likely to survive is the lizard, and the least likely to survive or develop even in most planets is the humanoid or the mammalian.
Now, the first question that everyone is going to be asking out there on the radio that's listening right now, and either one of you can answer this, is how do you know?
Yes, well, all of this information is based on my channeling, which I have to admit may be subject to being wrong, but that's how I know it. I was told this.
Greg, you've dealt with her channeling for a while. How did you guys come together? I mean, how did you figure out she was a channeler?
When I was introduced to her, I had no idea that she was a channel, and she didn't have much of an idea about that either. She had to tell you this part, but she'd been channeling.
Well, that's very interesting.
She'd been channeling, actually, for quite a while, even beginning in childhood without realizing it was channeling. Maybe she ought to tell that part of the story.
Hey, Nicolette, go ahead.
Apparently, when I was a child, I had a very active fantasy life, and I was fantasizing about this particular planet and this particular type of species, a humanoid species that were very magical, that had no technology, and their interactions with a neighboring planet, which eventually gave them technology. And eventually they ended up going out and meeting other species of beings out there in space and getting involved with a federation of planets, etc. And all of the different things that happened on that planet seemed to be in the fantasy, let us say, I couldn't change it. It felt like I was being told a story, not making one up. And later, when I talked about that to some other people in ufology, they said, well, you weren't making it up. You were channeling. And I didn't know how to handle that at that time, but...
You said more than gee whiz, probably.
Yeah, I was like, okay, well, that's an interesting thought.
And how does channeling actually work? I mean, from Greg's discussion, evidently, if you guys do this radio show, you can channel right in, tune in, and target someone, huh?
Yes, it's... when you're channeling, basically it's you're connecting yourself to the universal mind or the Akashic records, or a lot of people have different names for this, but basically you're able to tap into the knowledge that's there. And so if the higher self of the other person permits, you can just tap into whatever information that higher self wants to give you.
So basically when you're ready to do that, you can do it at will most of the time.
Yes, I have been able to, what I call conversationally channel, which is to begin channeling while I'm having a conversation. But generally, I just go into a trance state and then begin channeling.
Greg, when was the first time you figured out she was a channeler? Did she do that or just tell you or what?
What would happen is that we would just be having a conversation like driving in the car. And she might pause a little bit and seem to be tuning in to somewhere else and say a sentence or so that was coming from not her conscious personality self, but somewhere else. And it was a very eloquent statement. And I might have asked her, well, where did that come from? And she'd say, well, I don't know, what would you say when I asked
that? Usually I'm like, I don't know, but it wasn't me.
So these things, in other words, you are a contactee as well, correct?
That's correct. Apparently, one of the reasons I can do this is because I've been in contact with ETs all my life, ever since I was at least 6 years old, from what I can tell.
It's the same group of ETs that are contacting you, or is it different, or how does that work?
Well, in my case, I believe I have multiple contacts. I think I've been contacted by grays, I've been contacted by lizards, and I've been contacted by another group that's not well known. I just call it Sal's group because that's what I call the leader of this group, the teacher.
Well, tell me a little bit about this group. You piqued my interest. What are they like?
Sal's group is very interesting, and I would be very interested in anybody that has had contact with this particular group, because you don't see it at UFO conferences. You don't see pictures of this particular entity, so I'm interested in anybody else that's had contact. But they had a dolphinoid-like skin, very thick, and they had only three digits on their finger, their hands, very long. First finger and middle finger, and then a very far back, set back thumb. So it looked like the thumb was halfway up their arm, but it's actually just a very long hand. Very long and skinny hand. His skull was very, very large, but it seemed to be divided in four parts, not just double hemisphere down the middle, but also a division between the two rear hemispheres and the two forward hemispheres. His eyes were large, but his eyelids were closed to almost a slit. He had eyelids, and so you could see that the eyes were large and black like a typical gray, but he had eyelids that covered most of his eyes.
Did you perceive this group of people? What did you call them again?
I just call them Sal's people. But
they never really explained who they are to you that way? And why did you give them that name?
Well, Sal, there was one being in particular that looked like a father figure to me, felt like a father figure to me. When I first saw his picture drawn after I described it to an artist, I just immediately felt this sense of, that's my father, that's my real parent, and a sense of love that was very, very strong and overwhelming. And his name is quite more complicated than that, but I just shorten it to Sal because it's easier for me to remember.
How did you first come in contact with this entity?
As far as I can recollect, I was in contact with this entity at a very, very early age.
So that kind of explains why you think maybe you were a child or something.
Well, there's a possibility that maybe I was. I don't know. But he told me in a telepathic communication that he had been seeing me before I was even born, and that he had seen me in other lifetimes, and that throughout different lifetimes he was training me as a child with information that he was giving me. I was trained to read alien languages, and I was also trained in psychokinetics.
Now, the reading alien languages, you're talking about actual reading of script?
Some of it is script. Some of it is actually a third-dimensional symbol that spins. Has a different meaning.
I have a little hard time contemplating that. You might explain. How would that be packed?
Well, it looked like a spiraled wire or something. So it's three-dimensional in its shape. But then as this three-dimensional object spins, space had a different meaning.
Greg, were you into this sort of subject before you met Nicolette?
Definitely. If you're talking about the channeling aspect, I had started out with Theosophy and Rosicrucianism and Edgar Cayce, and then a little later on the Seth material came along from Jane Roberts, and then after that there were more and more channelings available, and I was studying all of them.
Opinion changed about channeling, or is it basically still the same, and if so, what is it? I mean, what do you think the idea of channeling really is all about?
To me, channeling is, and I'll give my definition of it, it's setting aside your personality self and making room for other intelligence to come through you, into you, and through you. And that means you're opening yourself up to the universe and all the various intelligences that are out there and all the wisdom that's out. When I was a child, I had this wish that if only there was this all-knowing source of information that I could ask my questions to and would give me an answer. And that's what channeling is to me. It's that potential. It's the closest thing we have to talking to God. And channeling, in channeling, as a matter of fact, you can talk to God. It's not all of God, but it's God as channeled through any particular person you channel.
Nicolette, just before you came over to do the interview, I noticed you were talking to some of the people here working, and they were having a little trouble with some of these concepts simply because of conventional wisdom on regular religion. And to me, I've been doing shows along this subject for, I've been in radio since 1958, so now we know we're old, pretty old. But it seems to me the spiritual aspects of this are very important, and they seem to be tied in not directly with all religions, but there are always a common thread here and there.
Yes, people tend to think of channeling as this really weird, paranormal kind of thing, but really this has been going on for a very long time. They used to call it speaking in tongue. They used to call it praying to God. It's really the same thing. It's the same thing as the Indians do when they do their drumming around the campfire. It's the same thing that the Africans do when they allow the spirits of their dead to come back and possess them for a short time. It's the same thing that telepathy is, really. When telepathy happens, basically what you're doing is you're opening yourself up to the universal mind, because all souls are one. And when you begin to realize that all souls are one, you can communicate with that, whether you're communicating with the oneness of that or you're communicating to an individual soul.
So I guess what I'm getting at is there an overall pattern or concept or someplace that we're tending? Are we these outside influences, for lack of a better term, the ETs, the movement, the communication, is it with one object in mind to get us to be better humans, or is there something else going on?
Well, the basic universal principle, or why we're all here, is to learn who we are. And We learn who we are by learning who we're not. So we come into this physical world, which is the not, which is not what we are. It is the falsehood. It is the stage. It is the play. And we're trying to go through all of these different scenes, all of these different experiences, so that we have a comparison of who we are not versus who we are, which is unconditional love. We're all a part of that unconditional love, which is, by all intents and purposes, God.
Yeah, the unconventional love is really a recurring theme, not only in Christianity, but almost all religions, I guess all religions.
I think if you really want to find truth in religion, you need to find what seems to be common in all of the religions.
Interesting thing they call it, you know, the golden rule, karma, whatever. But you're right. It's unconditional. By the way, the thing that interests me about your relationship here, and I think this is very interesting, and I think our listeners will find it too, is that since you were interested in the subject already, and you were attracted to Nicolette, was this arranged by somebody, or what do you think?
Well, we believe that there are no accidents, that things happen by synchronicity. They have meaning. Because behind the scenes, for all of this that's going on in this world, we're spirit, and we're aware of everything that's happening, and things get coordinated. So what happened was, in the physical world, is a friend of mine recognized Nicolette at a comic book convention as being a fellow traveler, so to speak, a fellow spirit. And he said, you've got to come up from San Diego, where she was living then, to the high desert in Southern California, and I'll introduce you to my spiritual friends. And I was one of those friends. So somehow this friend of mine recognized her as a fellow spirit, introduced her to me, and one of my wishes to be able to work with a channel and be close, have a close relationship with that person and represent them professionally, it all came to pass.
Interesting. Now, is it possible for her to channel you, or is that the way that works? Like, in other words, can I say to Nicolette, channel me, baby?
Theoretically, but channeling is normally not going to be of a personality self. It would be of your higher self that she would channel. And in fact, she has channeled my higher self for me, so I could have a conversation with my own higher self through her.
Did you remember any of that conversation?
You know, we've done so many channelings that I would have a tough time on the spot remembering a particular thing that was said to be my higher self.
In other words, what I'm getting at is the benefit of channeling to the individual. It's what about that, Nicolette? What are the benefits?
The benefits, it's very important for a person, if they want to make better decisions for themselves in their life, if they want to understand their life, if they want to be able to go into a better direction, especially if they're not happy with the life that they're in, to be able to begin to develop a relationship with their higher self. And sometimes they can't develop that on their own, so channeling can help them begin that conversation with your higher self. I'm not doing anything that anybody, you know, else couldn't do also, but sometimes they need a little help as to how to go about doing that.
The thing that, before we get off the air, I'm going to get back to the channeling, but there's something that passed by us a little earlier in the interview that I really wanted to follow up with you. And when we're talking about the different species of ETs and on and on and on, who's the godhead, who's the boss, or is there one?
That's a very good question. Because one of the things that we're here to do is learn from each other. Because basically what I was told was that when God expanded the universe, he was expanding it based on the fact that he didn't know who he was either. And so we became individual consciousnesses. And as we're discovering who we are, so is also God.
Interesting idea, interesting concept. Greg, whose idea was it to write this book?
Nick,
I figured it was his. This is the reason I gave him the mic.
Well, here's what happened is a friend of ours showed us this list that was put out on the internet called The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly in Ufology. And it told you who you could trust and who not to trust, who was either a researcher or a speaker or contactee in the UFO field. And we used this list for a while, and then we started asking Nicolette's entities through her channeling for opinions on the same people, and found that we could get better information ourselves directly through channeling than was on this list. And we said, hey, why don't we do our own list and put that out to people and give them all this information we're getting.
Is the list different from the original one on the internet? I mean, did some of the good, the bad, and the ugly turn out to be beautiful and the bad turn out to be good?
Yes, and what was most important about it was is that unlike the original list, who had some occasions where people were guilty by association, we found that instead of just blanket decision of that person's bad because they're connected to the government, we found out that we got a little bit more about their personality, why they think the way they think, why they perceive the truth as they see it. And so truth became very relative after a while. We realized that it wasn't about whether or not they were telling the truth. It was about whether or not they believed they were telling the truth.
In many ways, truth is abstract if you stop and think about it.
Well, the reality that we exist in is created by our belief systems. So what we believe is true for us, but only for us.
And so when you go to these UFO conferences like this week, do these speakers know you're judging them?
Well, hopefully you're not judging them, because if you realize that truth is relative to your perceptions, then you need to be very discerning about your perceptions versus their perceptions.
Nicolette brought up something very interesting, Greg, the government and government involvement. Just how much is the government involved in this?
It's maybe the most important subject, the subject of extraterrestrials and what our relationship is with them, and the government has been totally denying even the existence of ETs. So this is supposedly a democracy that we're living in, and yet on this most important of all subjects, we're being totally denied information and input.
Do you see anything changing in this area? I mean, old habits are hard to break, and realize that you get a bunch of guys together who were raised in the Christian church and fundamental beliefs, and all of a sudden they find out that some of these things may be a little different from what they were taught. The first thought probably would be, if they had a think tank, was, the public couldn't handle that.
Oh, yes, that's correct. After a while, I stopped being mad at the government for holding all the secrets, because after a while, I began to realize they have reason to be concerned. The fact is that if there was sudden contact, and if that contact was a species-to-species open, I mean, if they landed on the White House lawn, the truth is that it would bring our society as we know it to its knees, to the ground. You would have different reactions. You'd have people that would be running in fear. You'd have people that wanted to fight. You'd have people that wanted to worship these beings. And these beings are just beings. They might be smarter than us. They might even be more spiritually aware, but they're no different than us. And we don't need to be worshiping them. And maybe there are a few of them that we need to fear, but we don't need to fear all of them. So we need to make sure that we don't have a blanket response to all of these different beings.
Greg, she brought up an interesting point about fear, and some of them maybe aren't all that good.
No. True? What we found through Nicolette's channeling is that there is a whole range of races. And even if you consider just the human species, the variety of individuals, good and bad, within the one species, you can realize that it's very difficult to generalize. And people who say all ETs are spiritual and are saviors, or on the other hand, all ETs are to be feared, they're dangerous, they have better technology, they want to take us over, neither of those viewpoints is correct. There's a whole range of things going on. It's a complex situation.
And that gets me back to the thing I was talking about earlier, Nicolette. Who's in charge? I mean, how did they all converge on the Earth at once? Or actually, I guess evidence. It's been thousands of years.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is a federation of planets, a group of multiple races together that are working to protect the Earth, but not interfere. There's a great deal of people in ufology that say, well, why don't they come and save us? Why don't they fix our situation here? Well, they have to follow the prime directive, and that is not to interfere with our natural evolution. We must learn to take responsibility for our own problems. We cannot expect ourselves to be saved by the good guys, and we need to be wary of the bad guys.
This gets me to a question here. You're different people. So maybe you have the same outlook, or maybe you don't. And is the future hopeful or not, Greg?
I'm an optimist about it. I realize that there's a scenario that we're now headed along where we could expand the war that we're involved with in the Middle East. We could have a full-scale World War III going on. And according to Nicolette's channeling, we're not going to have open contact until we settle this issue of this warfare that's going on at present. So we're looking maybe to beyond settling this situation before we could really be optimistic.
Nicolette, this friction's been going on for some time, so that doesn't give much hope it's going to be settled right away.
No, not likely. I think that this is going to go on for quite a while, and you know, we have choices, and we have choices every day, every moment. If our belief systems change, if our faith changes, we can change the whole world. And that's where the change is going to come from, individuals changing their belief system and not falling into the fear tactic that the government wants us to believe in, because they want to pursue the war. And so they want everybody to be afraid, and that's why they're filling the media with fear.
I agree with you on that completely.
So I think we should, no matter what, not fall into that trap, not fall into the trap of, you know, the world's going to blow up if we don't get it right. And to tell you the truth, I'm kind of indifferent, because basically I feel that if the world blows up, okay, so what? We're spirit. We'll go on. We'll get another planet. You know, if we can get it right this time, wonderful. But if we can't, you know, nothing's lost.
In other words, Your last comment's a hint of a strong belief in reincarnation. What's the overall object? Is it an ongoing thing, like I'm Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and end, and it never stops? Is that what happens, or what?
Yeah, the Alpha and Omega never stops. It's constantly going. It's constantly exploring. It's constantly expanding its experience through us as individuals of free will. And so we have that same option, that same freedom as individual souls. We will continue until we're happy with what we know. And there's so much to know, so we could be here a while.
The clock is about to get us here, but we still have a few minutes. Greg, in your book and in your thought patterns, is there something, subject that I haven't covered that you think our listeners need to be covering?
Well, I'll just give you an example of what we found out, that our whole NASA space program is basically fraudulent. That the first time we went to the moon, Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin encountered extraterrestrials there. The moon was already inhabited. And telepathically, they were told, or Neil Armstrong is the one who remembered this. I think Buzz Aldrin was so traumatized he didn't remember it. But he was told telepathically, this is our planet, or our place. You get off. You're not welcome here. And so right away we had to, you know, cancel plans for any further moon exploration after the few Apollo missions that were already on the books.
You got a good point there. All of a sudden we just stopped going. There had to be a reason for that. And now they're talking about going back. I wonder why.
Well, it's going to be very interesting. There's other countries now that want to go. There's private parties that want to go. You know, NASA's been very concerned about putting civilians in space because you couldn't control them the way you could control the astronauts, who are military people. Now that civilians are going to be going into space, maybe some things are going to open up. I don't know how this is going to play out.
Nicolette, do you have an idea?
It could be very interesting, but I'm very hopeful that contact and truth of that contact will be inevitable if private people continue to venture out into space on their own. So I'm very hopeful in that regard. As the pressure continues to go on to control this information, the truth is going to leak out, because you can't put truth under pressure without it leaking out the sides.
It's true, secrets are very hard to keep over the long haul. You got an interesting point there. When you do your show, when you get it going, and people call in and they ask for you to channel, that's a quiet studio operation probably. But you can actually just kind of pick up on, I'm very intrigued with that idea that, I've always thought of channeling, and I have not had that much experience with it. As I told you, I've had a couple interviews over the past. But I've always thought of channeling as being akin to maybe some kind of mental gymnastics. You had to have the correct background, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, there are some things that I have to be wary of. I have to make sure that there's not too many electrical cords around me and in my auric field. I often like to make sure that it's reasonable.
Why are the electrical cords just interference or what?
Electromagnetic interference, yeah. It throws me off.
In other words, you might get a confusing signal.
Yeah, it messes up the signal a little bit. It's like when you're trying to tune into a radio station and you hear two of them at the same time. Yeah.
Interesting analogy. Do you remember the channeling experience? Do you remember what is being said?
For the most part, I do, but sometimes I tend to forget a particular session 3 or 4 days later.
Well, you're right. I mean, since you do a lot of them at this point, and especially if you start doing a radio show, you'll be doing even more all the time. That would get very confusing, I imagine, if you had kept everything right there on the front burner.
Not only that, but I just have a bad memory in general.
You and me both. That's what. That's an advantage, though. Sometimes you can ask redundant questions and get interesting answers.
Sometimes you get different answers depending on your perspective, because your truth has changed, so therefore the answer will change for you.
You're absolutely right, and I thought that was a good point you were making about the government. Is that? From where they're coming from, it may not. In fact, I get that impression. A lot of the things they do are probably more invasive than they should be, but that's the government way, you know?
I've been a military abductee, and at first I was very mad about the fact that they were treating me like some sort of alien spy. But you know what? From their perspective, I guess I could understand. I mean, I'm having contact with other beings, other people, and they want to know what that contact's about.
When you had the military abduction, they show up right after the other abduction or what?
Generally, yes. I do have the ET abduction happen first, and then following afterward the military.
How do you think the government knows?
Well, I was told that the original way that they found out that I was being abducted was that I was a military brat and I lived on base housing. And apparently they have some sort of sensor devices that pick up when there's a spaceship that's in the military housing. And after that, I guess they probably tagged me with an implant or something like that and just keep track of me every once in a while.
Do you have any evidence that you've had an implant?
I had some strange bloody noses when I was a kid after a night of strange dreams, but other than that, I really don't know if I have any evidence for that.
Greg, what's your opinion about the whole subject of the military and their involvement?
There's actually different levels of military. There's the so-called gray military that has much less knowledge of the subject than the deep black military, which is not even necessarily connected with elected government, but has segregated itself off as private industry, for example, where everything can be kept totally secret. And that's where you get the real black budget, high-tech stuff going on. And I believe the group that abducts Nicolette is one of these off-government groups rather than part of the official government.
Interesting. Now, we're going to close the show out. If a listener called in your show and you started channeling, what would happen? How would that play out? I mean, would I say, I am Jerry Pippin, and I'm not been feeling well lately. Can you help me or what? Do you have a certain entity that you channel, or is there many people? How does that work? I'm really very curious.
I'm one of the lucky channels because I have a multiple entity capacity. I can channel the higher self of anybody that would call, as well as I've channeled 46 entities of higher spiritual knowledge, of ETs, angels, God, Christ, Babaji, Buddha, you name it. I've channeled quite a few of them. And so whatever is the proper necessary thing for that particular individual will come in for that individual.
I'm trying to get the overall concept. See, the producer packager in me is curious here. What kind of caller would you want? What would be the kind of sort of thing that would happen on that program?
Well, the program I would like to do, which is ET Views News, would be people that would ask questions about what's really going on in the government and the ET phenomenon in general, because I have a high interest in that. But also, I would be willing to help people with their personal issues, their personal problems, particularly those of the Indigo Child phenomenon or the Star Children phenomenon, people that are in contact with other people and being able to help them understand their contacts.
Do you consider yourself a star child?
Yes, I'm definitely a star child.
And how about Greg?
Yes, I too. And I want to add about Nicolette's channeling that she's one of the few channels who has an ability to actually identify different races of extraterrestrials that people may be in contact with. So you could have people call in who believe that they're contactees. And Nicolette, through her channeling, could tell them what's going on, what race is contacting them, and what the agenda is.
And speaking of the agenda, is most of it a little nefarious, or is it most of it good, or is it just a whole gamut?
There is a whole gamut. Different alien species have different agendas. The most common agendas is helping us out to keep us from environmentally destroying ourselves or politically destroying ourselves. And then there's the grays, of course, which are creating the hybrids so that they may retain their physicality or their life. They basically have cloned themselves out of existence, and they have to back engineer themselves in order to continue. And so they're using our genetics for that. And then other beings want to trade. They want to trade with our government and are trading with our government. They're trading technology for goods.
What kind of goods?
Well, we have one thing that is quite abundant on this planet that most planets don't have an abundance of, water.
So literally, when you, and we do many UFO file reports each week, of sightings, and invariably, week after week, there's some UFO near a body of water, and they may actually just be literally drawing that water up.
Yes, exactly. And the other thing that we trade is gems, rubies, sapphires, crystals. They use these things for power sources and to create laser beams and that sort of thing, too.
Well, it's been an enjoyable hour with both of you. Greg, you have anything to add to that? If we get ready to close here?
I'm told that, again, through channeling, although not Nicolette's at this time, that they've been taking these gems from the Earth for millennia. And we're getting to the point where humans are beginning to appreciate the value of these and will start to ask them to be returned. So we'll see what happens with that.
You think they'll return them?
I think they are returning them. Matter of fact, I just recently heard a story of somebody that said that they needed three crystals for healing, and they got two of them from a mine and were looking for the third, and the UFO dropped it off on the ground in between two trees nearby.
So, in other words, they are aware of our needs and are compassionate about it.
Oh, yes, definitely. Because of their telepathic ability, they're very aware of what we're doing and how we're doing and what we need.
Hey, the name of the book, again, is What's Who's Who in UFOs and ETs. Greg, it's always a joy.
Oh, thank you very much. I just want to add, if we have a few more seconds, that there are some ETs who abduct people purely for spiritual education, to promote spiritual growth. I have that kind of abduction, so does Nicolette, by Syrians, for example. And so all abductions are not necessarily with the purposes of the ET. Some are to help us.
Now, the when you say Syrians, you mean from Sirius?
The Sirius star system, planets of the Sirius star system.
Okay, and how many planets do you think there are here?
I have no specific knowledge of that. They identify themselves by the star rather than the particular planets.
Nicolette, I've enjoyed it too. Thanks very much. You got anything to add?
Thank you very much. And all I can add is that what you believe is what is real. So if you don't like your life, change what you believe.
Good way to end the show. This is Jerry Pippin. This is UFO Files from the Flamingo Hotel.